But interesting enough, we put augmented reality in our manufacturing plant. We make network communication devices as well, and we've been able to reduce assembly time by 40%.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the show today, I have my two special guests, Vanessa and Ray. Vanessa and Ray, would you like to introduce yourselves, with maybe Ray going first?
Sure. Thanks, Tom. Ray Russ, I'm with Fujitsu. I am the head of all of our smart factory industrial IoT solutions for North America. Previously to this role, in the last 2 years, I met as our SAP Center of Excellence for North America. So I've been in the SAP ecosystem for about a little over 25 years, and specifically in manufacturing. So thanks for having me today, Tom.
No worries. And Vanessa, welcome back. For people who might have missed your previous episode, do you want to reintroduce yourself?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, Tom. And thanks, Ray, for joining me and coming on today. My name is Vanessa Molina, and I am the Global Director for Industry 4.Now at SAP's Industry 4.0 initiatives. I manage our global partners in helping them take their Industry 4 strategies to market.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And I should have mentioned at the outset that this is one of our Industry 4.0 for Friday's series. So welcome aboard, everyone. And Vanessa, in our prep call, you mentioned the kind of the changing line of business buying decisions. We had a bit of a chat about that, and I thought you make up a couple of interesting points there. So do you want to expound a little bit on about that for people who are listening?
Sure. Thanks. So yeah, in my experience over the course of the past 4 to 5 years, we've seen buying decisions moving away from IT and moving more into the different lines of business. But I think for manufacturing and supply chain, it's been slightly different in that manufacturers and supply chain, it's not just the IT and the operations that are happening. It's IT operation technologies. And now we have engineering technologies that are affecting the entire organization. So line of businesses are super interdependent, especially in this post-COVID world. It highlighted more than anything how interdependent they are. And despite the fact that they have different needs, pains, domains, they jointly decide on initiatives and purchases for these initiatives, because at the end of the day, they all benefit from them. And they all have the same pressure to be more agile, to increase their response times to market conditions. So, you know, that's one of the most dramatic changes, I think, when it comes to manufacturing and supply chain. And, you know, as I said in our previous podcast, to me, this just underscores that, you know, Industry 4 initiatives are really about data fabrics. It's workflows and processes beyond the four walls of the plant. Initiatives have to drive an operating model that aligns the factory with product development, product supply strategies, supply chain management, and how the business works. So, you know, this to me is really one of the biggest changes that you see.
Okay. And Ray, comments on that?
Yeah. You know, Vanessa, we talk about buying decisions and how it's changed. You know, you and I have known each other for quite a while. And what we saw early on, you know, the days of Fujitsu about 8 or 9 years ago, we saw a lot of POCs, or, you know, pilots actually, or proof of concepts that were one-offs, and they were pretty much managed by the IT department. And I think traditionally, as a systems integrator, we traditionally work with the CIO. We saw a lot of projects fail because IT really wasn't working with the business. One of the largest areas of shadow IT in a company are plant managers, because they're not getting what they need from enterprise IT. So you talk about IT, OT, and ET integration. We saw a lot of projects actually get started because somebody gave something to a developer. They built out an application, sent it down to a plant, and the plant manager said, this is not what we needed. We had one particular customer said, we had two shots at this. If we come in and do it again, we're going to fail. So we were brought in to help them. The first thing we did was go down to the plant, work with the operators, work with the plant manager, and help develop out that application that ended up being successful. The other thing we did is we saw the decision-making process change was because, again, the business was not involved. The other thing we did, Vanessa, is, and Tom, you know, we looked at what a smart factory needed to be. So I took my team into a conference room in Chicago, locked ourselves in with a few days and a bunch of sticky notes, and defined from a business perspective what a smart factory is. So from an attribute perspective, real-time, connected, intelligent, and then the domain areas that a smart factory needed to focus on, whether it be operations, maintenance, quality, and so forth, sustainability, and so forth, in about 8 or 9 different domain areas. And then the third thing we focus on is the technology, whether it's an IoT platform, an MES solution, augmented reality, and so forth. But our approach was really to take a technology agnostic approach when we started the framework, go in, define the strategic outcomes that customers, a client's looking for, and from a top-down perspective, and then from a bottoms-up, actually doing the discovery and build out that long-term framework. We also built in Michael Hammer's process enterprise maturity model and a hybrid version that specifically for manufacturing. So as we build out that framework and that roadmap, we can help them determine specifically where they're at along the roadmap at each different phase to become a smart manufacturer.
And you know, Ray, this is why SIs are so important to us. They really facilitate the alignment of business functions during the design, implementation, and integration of new technology phase. And this results in better data collaboration, which is ultimately what we want for our customers.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, you know, Vanessa. And you know, I've worked very closely with you and your team and the whole manufacturing team to make sure that we're working with you to define the solutions, what we're hearing from our customers, but also help your customers be more successful as they roll out SAP solutions.
Ray, I mean, this smart factory framework you're talking about sounds really intriguing. Are there any successful implementations you can talk about?
Tom, absolutely. About 2 years ago, we got brought into a company that was struggling to implement SAP manufacturing solutions, MII and MES. We got brought in. They had originally had 12 different MES solutions in 12 plants, but they had a total of 22 plants. We came in and implemented SAP MII and MES, one instance across 22 different plants integrated to the ERP solution. This company made about 40 or 50,000 orders a day, 95% custom orders, with really a lack of visibility into the orders, into WIP, into production, into inventory, and so forth. Very successful go live. About 6 months later, I was on a manufacturing forum, virtual one. This was earlier this year. And one of the executives on the forum happened to be the head of customer service for this company. Previously, she had to have, and I'd never met her before. And I remember this early on in my career, somebody having to pick up the phone and call a plant to say, okay, or call a planner and say, where is this order at, which plant, and then call that plant and find out where it was. And her customer service reps, 350 of them across the country, had to do that and then have to call back a customer to find out and let them know when the order be ready. She told me that she had real-time visibility, and our entire team did. Log into the CRM system, be talking to a contractor or a customer, and be able to tell them exactly where the order is and when the ship date and when it would be on their doorstep. So great example of what we were able to accomplish with this framework.
So a huge uptick, obviously, in customer satisfaction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the whole goal, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Vanessa, for companies considering Industry 4.0 proof of concepts, what advice?
Great question. I would say first, don't just look at it from a cost-cutting perspective for operational efficiency, which is very common, right, for plants and manufacturers to look at it. I actually take the suggestion that you should focus on the data, focus on processes, focus on silos. Ray's example just highlights, you know, really the benefits that you can reap from breaking down those silos and really looking at the processes and allowing the data to flow. This will allow you to you know, get benefits of process automation or even hyper automation of common repeatable tasks. I would say robotics and machine learning, they can be leveraged more broadly. They can be applied to increasingly sophisticated tasks, you know, product development, manufacturing operations, supply chains, sales, marketing, and even customer services, Ray highlighted. I would advise them to use caution with initiatives that are just technology projects at the site. It should be part of an end-to-end supply chain network design or a cascading strategy, basically across the supply chain that gives you better quantifiable business outcomes, kind of as Ray outlined in the smart factory methodology. I think they do a great job of ensuring that the proof of value is tied to business outcomes.
Okay, Ray?
Yeah, Vanessa, that's a really good point. I mean, our the output of our Smart Factory framework is exactly that, tied to business value and the outcomes, right? And your comment around the silos and the domain areas and process, I think, is really key. When we start these things again, we do technology is important, and we do a technology or an asset inventory while we're doing the maturity model and identifying the business processes, right? Because that's important. We got to come back to that. But we do start, and the whole focus is looking at those business processes by domain area, making sure where we understand the integration points, right? But tying every single one of the initiatives back to the business value and an ROI is important. Exactly. Not just doing sexy projects because they're sexy. Back in the day, everyone wanted augmented reality, right? But interesting enough, we put augmented reality in our manufacturing plant. We make network communication devices as well, and we've been able to reduce assembly time by 40%. So just want to highlight that.
40%.
That is actually a very fascinating thing that you do at that plant, by the way. I've seen it in action.
Wow, that's impressive. We're coming towards the end of the podcast now, folks. Is there any question that I have not asked that you wish I had, or any topic we've not discussed that you think it's important for people to be aware of? Ray, maybe you go first.
Yeah, Vanessa and I were talking earlier today about, and I mentioned it earlier too, about POCs and that. And POCs aren't a bad thing. They're a good thing as long as they're tied back. Like I said, earlier, we've seen projects fail because they get caught in POC purgatory is the new buzzword, right? But last year we had a company that makes tissue papers. You can imagine they couldn't make enough. We had wanted to go through, lay out the entire Smart Factory framework and roadmap for them. But at that point, right then, all they wanted to do was understand their production. We did do a proof of value, a POC, in about 3 to 4 weeks, working with SAP to make that happen. We then went out and rolled out the solutions, OEE solution with SAP MII. We did the entire project remote, including discovery with cameras walking the line because due to COVID, we couldn't be on site. But we were able to prove that out. Now we've gone back with them as COVID's loosening up, and we are working with them to build out the rest of the roadmap and the framework. So POCs aren't bad, but they got to have purpose.
Interesting. Very good. Very good. Vanessa?
No, I think he covered it really well. I agree. POCs aren't bad. I think, you know, you really just need to make it less about cost cutting and more about efficiency and processes and letting the data flow.
Okay. Excellent. Superb. If people want to know more about Ray, yourself, or Fujitsu, or Vanessa, or any of the topics we talked about in the podcast today, where would you have me direct them, folks? Ray, you go first.
Sure. Probably the best way is to reach out to me by email. It's ray.russ, R-U-S-S, at Fujitsu, F-U-J-I-T-S-U.com.
Superb. And Vanessa?
You could visit me at SAP. On our website, we have the innovation hubs, and you can actually experience for yourselves some of the things that we highlight in this podcast, and more importantly, some of the great innovations that SAP does.
Superb. Folks, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Vanessa.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.